Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. It is Friday, June 11th, 2010, and we are broadcasting live from Vancouver, BC. I'm your co-host, Joanne Cheng, and as usual, I'm joined by my co-host, Allison Cole.
Hello.
And our technician. Oh, hi, Allison.
Didn't notice you were here.
And our technician, John Pranger. On the show today, we will be interviewing Erica Meyer, Executive Director of a DC-based organization, Compassion Over Killing. She'll be speaking to us about an undercover investigation that the organization conducted at Cal Cruz Hatcheries in California. And also joining us today is Leanne Kronkis, the Shelter Director of Farm Sanctuary in California. Leanne has been caring for ducklings that were seized from the Cal Cruz Hatcheries as a result of Compassion Over Killing's undercover investigation. Shall we get the show started, Allison?
Yeah, right now I want to give you a bit of a preview of what we will be hearing more about on next week's show, which is the issue of the international whaling moratorium possibly being lifted in a couple of weeks on June the 21st by the International Whaling Commission. As our listeners may or may not be aware of, there has been a moratorium on commercial whaling for the past 24 years, and this has been considered to be one of the world's major environmental achievements. However, there is now a proposal standing on the table of the IWC to dismantle this decision, and it actually stands a real chance of being put through. From what I've been reading, there are a lot of city politics involved, as you may expect with such an issue involving major decision makers of major countries. And so it's not such a simple decision as you might think, due to the interests that lie in the powers that be. This proposed new deal would allow the three countries which have continued killing the great whales in defiance of the ban to recommence whaling legally in return for bringing down their catches. These nations that continue the practice of hunting and killing whales are Japan, who say they are doing it as scientific research, and that's how they get away with it, and also Norway and Iceland, who have both lodged formal objections in the past with regards to this ban. So these countries have been affected, allowed to disgrace, disregard, and disrespect this ban for all of these years. And now they will essentially be still permitted to carry on the killing of the whales that was stopped for a reason 24 years ago, but will be allowed to do it now without, I suppose, being recognized as violating a law anymore. Since 1986, the three nations that have killed, have between them killed more than 30,000 whales, the Japanese leading with more than 1,000 whales a year. Jeez. In fact, as far as I'm aware, the only body of people that have ever challenged these whalers and actually have tried to stop them from whaling and have them criminally charged are the people of the Sea Shepherd Society. As we know by seeing the television show Whale Wars and seeing and hearing about it quite a bit in the news media, the Sea Shepherd Society goes to Antarctica every year and confronts the Japanese whalers and physically disrupts their activities so that they are not able to kill as many whales, and they have been successfully doing so for many years now. But now if this proposal goes through, it's like all that effort has been for nothing. If it can just be so easily upturned by a show of hands at this meeting in Morocco this month. So this proposal has actually been on the table for 3 years now, and it was first thought to be merely a diplomatic compromise to end the constant confrontation at IWC meetings between the whaling countries and the anti-whaling countries. But it is now known that it has actually had a different purpose, which was actually instigated in the United States by leading figures in the Bush administration, among them being Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska, the longest-serving Republican senator in American history. To me, the background is unsurprisingly convoluted and has to do with Senator Stevens once seeking a deal with Japan after the Japanese caused problems for the U.S. by objecting to the whale hunting quota for Alaskan Inuit people who have a permitted traditional hunt for about 50 bowhead whales. This senator was then believed to have put pressure on the then U.S. Whaling Commissioner, who was also the IWC chairman, to open talks with Japan, which was done in 2007. The proposals put forth to allow the Japanese and others to restart whaling commercially were thrown out by the IWC, but now essentially the same deal is back on the table. So that's a brief history of how these things happen in politics, and what is ultimately, what this ultimately comes down to is the issue of the whales. If this moratorium is abandoned, it will represent one of the most damaging setbacks ever for wildlife conservation. And unfortunately, President Barack Obama is now breaking a campaign promise as his administration is backing up this proposal and pushing for it to go through. So what can you, our listeners, do about this? If you want to see the moratorium maintained and the proposal not approved, I suggest going to the Humane Society International's website at www.hsi.org, and there they have some links to take action to save the whales, which mostly involve contacting the various governments involved in the IWC to tell them that you do not support commercial whaling in their countries. Stay tuned for more information on next week's show on this pressing issue.
Thank you so much for that, Allison. It's certainly a very important issue, and hopefully you'll all go to hsi.org and take some action on it. So today I want to talk a little bit about the so-called humane meat. So these would be the high-priced organic free-range meat, egg, and dairy products you buy because you feel that the animals probably had a better life and died a more merciful death as compared to the factory-farmed ones. But very few people actually look into what it really means when you buy a package of free-run eggs or grass-fed beef. So I'm going to run down a few things that I discovered recently. Let's start with eggs. What would you say if I told you that male chicks in the egg industry were tossed into a meat grinder and ground up alive because they're of no use to the egg producers? Most people would think that find this horrifying and disgusting. And if this practice is done at all, you would probably point a finger at those big, bad factory farms. However, grinding up male chicks alive is not just a common practice. It is considered an acceptable and humane practice, even by the BC SPCA. I'm using the BC SPCA as an example here because their certification actually represents the highest animal welfare standards in BC. According to the BC SPCA standards for raising and handling of laying hens, an acceptable method of chick euthanasia includes high-speed maceration. When properly designed, macerators are used that ensures instantaneous death of every chick. Chicks must be delivered to the maceration in a way that prevents a backlog of chicks at the point of entry without causing injury or avoidable distress to the chicks before maceration. Interesting. If maceration is really deemed as humane euthanasia, as they say here, why does the SPCA not allow dogs to be euthanized by throwing them into a wood chipper?
Good question.
I mean, if it's instant, right? As a caring consumer, can you live with the fact that for every cage-free, free-run, certified organic egg you eat, a male chick was thrown into a macerator and grounded up alive? Is this the humane practice you're paying extra money to support? It's the exact same horrific practice used in factory farm egg production. Okay, so enough about that. Let's talk about mutilations. You know, when you get your dog or cat spayed or neutered, it's a big surgical procedure. They have to be put under, and then they require time to recover afterwards. The BC SPCA standards for castrating cows, however, says this. Castration must be performed before 7 days of age in the event where an older, more than 7 days of age animal is to be castrated. The procedure must be done using a sedative and analgesic by a veterinarian. So that means if you're a farmer and you have a calf who is between 1 to 6 years old, you can just walk up to this calf.
1 to 6 days old.
I'm sorry. 1 to 6 days old. You can just walk up to this calf with a metal snip and cut off his testicles without sedating him or numbing him. You don't even need to have any veterinary training. And by the way, calves are walking around like real animals the day they're born. Mm-hmm. So they're not like these squirmy, furless things with their eyes still closed. At 1 to 6 days old, they're like real animals, bouncing around, mooing, and playing. Kind of like your dog. So there are quite a few other disturbing practices allowed by the humane standards, which I don't have time to get into today, but maybe we'll do it in another show. But what exactly about any of this is considered humane? And does any of what I just described fit into any consumer's definition of happy meat? If you care about animals enough that you want to pay more for higher welfare standards, why not consider going vegan? If it's too hard to go vegan, reduce the amount of meat, milk, and eggs you eat. Humanely produced animal products makes close to no difference for the animals. But every time you choose an alternative to meat, milk, and eggs, you're washing your hands off these cruel practices completely. If you eat 6 eggs a week, cut it down to 3. If you already don't eat too many animal products, push yourself a little bit further. You don't have to break the bank to make compassionate choices. Nothing is going to help the welfare of animals more than if you just stop eating products that are made from their flesh and bodily excretions. So if you buy organic free-range meat, milk, and eggs because you think you're helping the animals, we'd like to hear from you. What are your thoughts about what I've just talked about? We'd be really happy to hear what you have to say. Email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or join our discussion on Facebook group at Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thanks, Joanne. Very interesting information there.
Yeah, there's lots of really gross things, actually, that I couldn't include here, but next time maybe. So we're going on to our first interview. Last week, Compassion Over Killing, a Washington, D.C.-based animal protection charity, released some disturbing undercover footage shot at Kelcruz hatcheries in California. Joining us on the line now to speak to us about this investigation is Erica Meyer, the Executive Director of Compassion Over Killing. Welcome to Animal Voices, Erica.
Hello.
Hi, Erica.
Hi. Hi, it's so great to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on your show.
Oh, great. Now, before we jump into the details about the investigation, I think it would be helpful if you can give our audience a little bit of background, because I think most people are probably not familiar with how the farming system works. Can you explain what a hatchery is and what exactly it is that Kelcruz Hatchery does?
Sure. Well, there are a couple different types of hatcheries. There are hatcheries that produce chicks and ducks for the meat industry, and then there are hatcheries that produce baby birds for the egg industry. And Kelcruz Hatcheries is a hatchery affiliated with the meat industry. Mm-hmm. And so when you go to the store and you're buying chicken, that bird obviously came from someplace, and so in the factory farming industries, the most efficient way for them to produce mass amounts of meat is to hatch mass amounts of baby birds, and that's done in a hatchery where the eggs are shipped in from a breeding facility, and they are, you know, sorted into trays. They're put into incubating rooms, and then after a certain period of time, the birds start hatching, and then they go into a processing system. And within the same day that they're hatched, typically these birds are then shipped out to a farm where they'll be raised until they reach slaughter weight, and then they'll be shipped off to a slaughterhouse.
That's kind of scary sounding. What did your investigator uncover at the Kelcruz hatcheries?
Well, there are also turkey hatcheries, and we actually did an investigation of a turkey hatchery a few years ago in North Carolina, and what we discovered in that case wasn't very unsimilar to what we discovered in this case. Basically, the investigator worked there for about a month, and he wore a hidden camera to document the day-to-day miseries that he was witnessing. And he was there to see and to document the suffering endured by hundreds of thousands of these newly hatched birds as they begin their very short lives in the meat industry. And from the moment that these birds are hatched, they are submerged into a world of misery. I mean, they're literally treated like inanimate objects. As you can see from the video, they're just being sorted through different machines. They're being dumped out of buckets. They're being counted and tossed around. And if you look really quickly, you almost don't think that these are animals because it's happening so fast and they're being bounced around so quickly. But these are baby birds who have just hatched. And as they're, dumped on the trays, mechanically separated from cracked eggshells, they're jostled on conveyor belts, sexed, sorted, counted, packed up, shipped out. In that entire process, many of these birds are becoming injured. And that's really where some of the really graphic footage from our videos is based on, is these birds becoming injured in the process of being hatched to being packed up for shipping out. And what the investigator documented in many cases birds who are not just becoming injured, but they're dying from the process. And these birds who are, they're deemed unfit for the processing system. So they're manually removed from the processing line and thrown into buckets, and then they're set aside for hours. And these are sick or injured birds who are clearly suffering, and they're set aside for hours, sometimes even overnight. And many of these birds end up on the cold concrete floors, and they suffer there until typically at the end of the day, the buckets of these birds are taken and dumped into a drain that is also used to get rid of the unwanted and the cracked eggshells. So they're literally discarded as trash. Other birds get physically mangled on the machinery. Their limbs, their skin, or their heads are ripped from their bodies as they get caught up in the conveyor belts and all the wheels that are spinning and processing them so quickly. And so the video also includes really hard-to-see footage of birds who have their limbs removed or their skin completely ripped off or they've been beheaded. And so that's what the investigator, while he was there for about 3 to 3.5 weeks, witnessed and used a hidden camera to document.
You said the animals being processed through, you know, like an assembly line, and then there are chicks being thrown on the ground and decapitated. How much of this is considered just systematic industry practice, or can they be considered improperly handling of the animals?
Well, the owner of the hatchery would certainly argue it's all industry standard. And I think that is clearly what he stated in the media. And the system that these animals are going through, I mean, the sheer number of them is of such a high volume that in order for them to process them in an efficient way to cut the bottom line down and to make as much money as possible, there are injuries that happen during this system. So it's a little bit of both. I mean, the system itself is inherently flawed. That's causing these animals to become injured. And at the same time, while the investigator was working there, as birds became sick or injured or were left on the floor to suffer, you know, there were people there who saw all of this and became desensitized to the issue and didn't take any proactive measures to ensure that these animals were not suffering. So it's really a mixture of both.
Now, when you turn this horrific video evidence over to the authorities, the Santa Cruz Animal Services Authority conducted their own investigation. What was the finding of their investigation?
Yeah, they within days of ending our investigation, we were so horrified to see this footage that we felt that we needed to immediately turn it over to authorities. So we did set up a meeting with the Santa Cruz Animal Services Authority, who also included the district attorney's office in the meeting because of the seriousness of what we had documented. And Animal Services, as you mentioned, conducted its own follow-up investigation. And they've really taken this case very seriously, and we applaud all of their efforts to move this case forward. And we don't have a copy of their actual report that is still being held with their office that we are trying to get public records to review it in more detail. But what we do understand is that their report did corroborate our evidence of abuse and neglect. And they, in fact, found so much evidence of abuse and neglect during their investigation that they decided that they needed to immediately impound 88 ducklings who were in urgent need of care. And so they impounded these ducklings, and they submitted a report to the district attorney's office recommending that criminal charges be filed.
Wow. Was Cal Cruz Hatcheries cited, prosecuted, or shut down?
They have not. None of the above, as far as we are aware right now. In fact, the district attorney's office has held on to this case for many, many months and gave us a call in the end of April 2010 stating that they were not going to be filing charges against the owner or the hatchery in this case.
2 weeks ago, the entire world was shaken by the video of the malicious beating of dairy cows on Conklin Farms in Ohio. I think what was even more shocking about the case was the fact that under Ohio law, an animal abuser will only be charged with second-degree misdemeanor, despite the malicious nature of his actions. How is the animal cruelty law in California compared to Ohio?
Yeah, that's a really fantastic question. And just, you know, the way in which the U.S. law is structured, I just want to give your listeners a quick introduction to this, because there are federal laws that protect animals in the United States, but unfortunately those federal laws don't protect farmed animals for the most part. There are no federal regulations whatsoever that protect animals while they are being raised on a farm. So there would be no federal laws that would apply to the Ohio case because they're being raised on a farm, or in this California case. So these animals are really at the mercy of the state-level laws, and most states don't protect farmed animals adequately. And so in the Ohio case, as you mentioned, it's a second-degree misdemeanor, which, you know, for what was documented, certainly many people are completely outraged by that. And in California, the good news is that California actually has some of the strongest animal cruelty laws in the United States, and in fact, in California, it's one of the few states that doesn't explicitly exempt farmed animals from its statutes, nor does it exempt what happens on farms, which are typically considered normal operating procedures or standard agricultural procedures. So what we witnessed in the California farm is clearly protected. These animals are clearly protected by the law, and the state of California has prosecuted farmed animal cases in the past. Most recently, many people might be familiar with the dairy cow slaughterhouse in Chino that the Humane Society of the United States had uncovered, and that investigation actually resulted in the largest meat recall in U.S. history. Mm-hmm. So California laws are much stronger than Ohio laws.
Then why was the district attorney not willing to uphold the law and prosecute the hatchery?
Well, that's actually unclear to us. We are not entirely certain why the decision was made to not prosecute. We know that, you know, we turned over our evidence. Certainly the Animal Services Authority in Santa Cruz submitted a report in support of our evidence, and they impounded birds. And now that this case has reached the media, the owner of the hatchery has stated in the media that, yes, indeed, animals are becoming injured in his hatchery, and, yes, he is dumping these birds down the drain. So there is an admission by the owner. Whether or not that extra admission by the owner could prompt the prosecutor's office to reevaluate the case, we don't know. But at this time, all we do know is that they have decided to not prosecute this case.
So at this point, they're just operating as usual, as if nothing had happened.
The only difference that we do know that has taken place is that since the Santa Cruz Animal Services Authorities conducted their investigation, the hatchery has decided to no longer hatch ducklings anymore. I don't know. I don't have the answer to that, unfortunately. The duckling part of their business, we believe, might have been a very small part. They largely hatch chicks. So they are continuing to hatch chicks who will be raised in the meat industry. And certainly the fact that they're not hatching ducks hasn't really changed the fact that these processes are still taking place and birds are still becoming injured on the machinery and they're still being dumped down the drain, et cetera.
And were the 88 animals impounded all ducklings or were there chicks as well?
During the impound, the only animals impounded were ducks.
Okay. What was the public response been like since the release of the footage?
Well, we released the footage on June 2nd during a press conference in Santa Cruz, and it certainly generated a lot of media interest. And I think the media interest then really prompted the public to stop and pay attention to this issue, especially in the community. We have been flooded with calls and emails from people who are concerned about this case, who, you know, are outraged that such cruelty is happening in their community, and not even just in Santa Cruz, but we are getting emails and calls from people around the country who are really horrified to see these baby animals being treated so callously.
I saw one of those news reports, and the owner of the hatchery said that he would make improvements to his facilities by having the workers dump out the garbage containers full of live chicks once every 15 minutes instead of once every half hour. Do you think this is going to make any improvement to his facility?
Well, our investigation never even revealed that the birds who are sick or injured are being euthanized or killed or whatever word he might want to use every 30 minutes. I mean, regardless of how often they're doing it, they are dumping birds down a drain.
Right.
How the birds end up dying during that process is unclear to us, and these are birds who are clearly suffering. But we're, you know, when our investigator worked there, the 30-minute rule that the hatchery owner is referring to was non-existent.
Right.
So if he is actually now, you know, ending the suffering of these birds every 15 minutes, certainly that's better than allowing the birds to suffer for hours on end.
But very, very small difference.
Right.
What can our listeners do to help the animals at hatcheries like Cal Cruz?
Well, the most important thing that that anyone can do to help stop such abuse is to simply not eat animals.
Mm-hmm.
These industries, I mean, this is one hatchery that we've investigated and uncovered abuses inside, but certainly investigation after investigation by a wide range of organizations, from Compassion Over Killing to the Humane Society of the United States to Mercy for Animals, you know, every investigation that's been released inside factory farms and slaughterhouses, the one common denominator is that animal abuse is standard. And so every time we sit down to eat and we choose to eat meat, milk, and eggs, we're supporting these industries that are abusing animals.
That's interesting you say that, because we were just talking about, you know, people switching to eating humane meat and that sort of thing. Do you think there's any way for people to boycott practices that was seen at Cal Cruz but still continue to eat animal products?
Well, in many cases, you know, animals who are raised on farms and where the practices are considered less inhumane, they're still coming from the same hatchery-type places as mm-hmm. Cal Cruz hatcheries. You know, when people are buying cage-free eggs, you know, the hens that are producing those eggs might lead slightly better lives than the birds who are confined in tiny wire cages, but it doesn't mitigate the fact that those chicks are still coming from hatcheries where half the birds are killed because they're males and they don't produce eggs. So there's still a level of cruelty no matter what type of animal product you're choosing to consume.
Say an organic, humane, cage-free farm, they would be getting all of their chicks from a place like Cal Cruz. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's very possible that that's the case. I mean, we specifically don't know where Cal Cruz Hatcheries is sending mm-hmm. all of its chicks. There was a case a couple years ago in Oakland, in California, in which the Oakland Animal Services had impounded hundreds of birds who were being flown in the cargo of an airplane from that were going to go from Oakland to Washington State. And presumably, it's a smaller facility. There are, you know, 100, maybe 500 birds where these birds were going to. And the origin of these birds was Cal Cruz hatcheries. So, you know, our understanding is from that case that it's possible that they are supplying small facilities mm-hmm. as well as larger facilities. But we don't that's proprietary information.
Right.
We don't have that knowledge. But we you know, these practices are standard in the industry.
So as long as you're eating animal products, you're contributing to that, basically.
Absolutely.
Compassion Over Killing is just a great organization. You're certainly not the size
Thank
of PETA
you.
Or HSUS, but you've achieved an enormous amount of successes.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of your most recent accomplishments?
Oh, sure, absolutely. You know, we focus as an organization on farmed animal issues specifically. We work to expose the cruelty on factory farms and in slaughterhouses, as well as promote and empower people to choose more compassionate foods. And so, you know, some of the more recent victories we've had, Boca Foods, which many people know as a company that makes vegetarian items like veggie burgers,
mm-hmm.
Et cetera, and chicken burgers and chicken nuggets. This company, as of a campaign that we launched last year, this year in 2010, the company has gone completely egg-free after
Right.
we launched a campaign to persuade them to stop using eggs. So this company now has completely decided to remove eggs from every single one of its products. which is a really huge victory that will take many hens out of cages who were producing eggs for this company to make vegetarian food items.
That's so wonderful. And you're saving all the male chicks from being ground up alive as well.
That's right. That's absolutely true, yeah. And another really exciting campaign that we recently launched it's called Maryland Veg Week, and we're based in Maryland. We're based in the D.C., Maryland area in the United States, and we have been working with several politicians to take more of a proactive stance on these vegetarian issues. And last year we hosted a very local Tacoma Park, which is the city that we're in, Tacoma Park Veg Week, and recruited our state senator to pledge to go vegetarian for a week. And he did so.
Oh, my goodness.
And we had our mayor of the town also sign a proclamation supporting Veg Week.
Wow.
And after this Veg Week was up last year, the senator decided he wanted to give it 2 weeks. This is Senator Jamie Raskin, for anyone out there who might know. He did it for 2 weeks, then he lengthened it to a month, and he is still vegetarian today.
Yeah, heard about that.
Oh, my
that
goodness.
One. Good for you.
What a success.
And he's a very, very vocal vegetarian. He's a very liberal politician, and he supports many important progressive issues, and he's combating the pollution on factory farms in our state as well. And he feels so passionate about these issues that he has helped us. This year, we hosted a Maryland Veg Week. He helped us recruit other politicians from the federal level to the county level to join his pledge. And we had 6 additional politicians this year pledge to go vegetarian. And we held a kickoff party where they all talked about why it's important to choose healthier, more sustainable, and more compassionate foods.
This is so wonderful to hear. Thank you so much for all the great work you're doing.
Well, thank you for having this radio show to help get the message out there. It's really fantastic.
Yeah, and thanks for coming on the show to talk to us. It's been really interesting.
Yeah.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
We have been speaking with Erica Meyer, the Executive Director of Compassion Over Killing. You can visit the organization's website on www.cok.net to watch the video of the hatchery and judge for yourself. Now on to the news. Scientists at University of Missouri announced that after more than a decade of research, they had created the first soy product that not only can be flavored to taste like chicken, but also breaks apart in your mouth the way chicken does. Not too soft, not too hard, but with that ineffable chew of real flesh. Scary stuff.
Yeah, what I've read is it's really hard to simulate the marination when skin, flesh marinates in blood in animals for all those years or months or whatever. That's what's hard to simulate, and that's what they've achieved.
And you know what? They made this with wheat, gluten, oil, water, and soy. That's it. Mm. But I guess the challenge was to figure out in what combination and how much to marinate.
How to get that texture.
Yeah. Exactly. So it came out, and according to Time Magazine's John Cloud, who tasted 3 dishes put together by the scientists and students, he said, "The way the meat broke across my teeth felt exactly like how boneless chicken breast does. It was slightly fibrous, but not fatty. The soy wasn't mashed together as in a veggie burger. Rather, it was more idiosyncratic, uneven, al dente, in other words, meat-like." So this product has not hit the market yet, but as soon as they can sell the technology to a food company. The next news, a national survey has found that more than half of British Columbia's dog owners, 51% to be exact, bought their dogs from a breeder. Shame on us. Mm-hmm. Rather than adopting a homeless canine from a shelter.
Quite surprising news to me.
I know. In Vancouver, you think people, or BC, people should be more aware.
We just think that because we live here, right? But, I mean, we've been hearing when we did that interview with Nathan Winograd about the United States, it's pretty common. And it's even common here at home.
Right. So I'm quite surprised, too. This figure represents the highest instance of breeder-bought pooches in the country, a full 8 points higher than the national average, which is 43%. The Harris Decima poll released Monday also found that Canadians are mostly unaware of the sheer number of homeless shelter dogs across the country. The largest portion of the poll's 1,008 telephone respondents, 11%, put the number of unwanted dogs brought to shelters in Canada every year at 10,000. According to the survey statistics, the actual number of dogs admitted to shelters annually is over three times that, at more than 36,000. Many of these animals are destroyed when homes cannot be found for them.
We need more education in the communities about that these dogs need homes. Do not buy from breeders.
I know. And, you know, SPCA should be out there giving out this message every single day.
Well, apparently some of their staff members also buy from breeders. Very reliable sources told me.
Oh, my gosh.
They need to be educated as well.
Well, on to happier things, the events. Do we have happier events?
Yeah, sure. I've got some events for you. So let's see here. So here's a radio documentary that's actually on tonight that I found, I think it's going to be really interesting. On Friday, June the 11th, tonight at 9 o'clock p.m., on the Idea Show on CBC Radio 1 in Canada, there's a documentary feature on the radio called Ocean Minds. Now, this is part two. I just found out part one actually ran last week, but you can hear it online. Life on Earth began in the ocean and then moved onto the sea, but one precocious line of mammals returned to the sea. How has water shaped the minds, the bodies, the sensory worlds, and the societies of whales? Our guide is Jeff Warren on the show. Jeff is an explorer of consciousness in its various forms. In 2007, he published a book called The Head Trip, Adventures on the Wheel of Consciousness. He spent the past 2 years thinking about whales and dolphins, visiting researchers in their labs and in their boats around North America and the Caribbean to find out what they're learning about mind, culture, and society in the ocean. So like I said, part one already aired last week on June 4th, and both parts of the show will be available online. Just look for them on the CBC website at www.cbc.ca/ideas. Another event I want to talk about is the upcoming Let Live Animal Rights Conference in Portland, Oregon. Just want to put in another plug for that because it is coming soon on Friday, June the 25th to Sunday, June the 27th. Yeah, it's going to be great. The 2010 Let Live Animal Rights Conference will be held at Portland State University. This year's conference will focus on creative activism and expanding your activist skills to build relationships in the movement and beyond. The goal is to help everyone realize their potential so they can utilize their unique abilities to further the movement as a whole. And there's an exciting lineup of speakers for the conference. If you want to find out more about this conference, who's speaking, how to register, registration is super cheap. It's only $15 for the whole weekend. Just go to letlivefoundation.org/conference. And also, I wanted to talk about an event that's happening in July, on Sunday, July the 11th, from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m., A Powerful Voice Animal Rights Community Dialogue Series will be presenting its second session focusing on planning fun and entertaining outreach events. This is hosted by Liberation BC. It takes place at Rada Yoga and Eatery at 728 Main Street in Vancouver. Do you want to see fun and exciting outreach events happening in Vancouver? Do you have ideas for music, theater, poetry, or art performances that promote compassion for animals? Join other like-minded activists and passionate animal lovers in creating and planning outreach events that go beyond the ordinary. Join the discussion whether you have skills, ideas, or talents that you would like to put to use or just want to help out. Everyone is welcome to attend this session. This is the second of the series of Animal Rights Community Dialogues hosted by Liberation BC. To register for this event, go to http://apowerfulvoice.eventbrite.com, and Bright is spelt B-R-I-T-E. If you have an animal or vegetarian-related event coming up that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver. And I just wanted to say one thing about registering for that workshop. for part of the series is there's only 50 spaces available, so register now before it's too late.
We're both registered, so there's only 48 spaces left for you guys.
Yeah, oh, I think there's 43, actually.
Oh, no.
I checked last night, yeah. So get onto it so you can get in. So it should be a really interesting... nothing really has been done like this before in Vancouver. It should be really interesting.
And you know what? I want to suggest that we have a Veggie Pride Parade because Toronto did theirs.
I heard about that.
It was pretty big. They had a float, like a huge float with cars, some Cadillacs and convertibles.
Yeah, I read there was a Toronto police officer dressed up as a pig, so everyone was involved, the whole community.
That's amazing. I wonder how well we can do if we had something like that.
I would love to do something like that here. You know, when we did the walk for animals last year and the years before that, that's just a lot of fun. I think we should do something that's more of an extension of that
and
show our veggie pride.
Yeah. Wear costumes. That's the best part, wearing costumes.
Yeah, when else can you wear your pig or cow costume, right?
Exactly. All right, we are ready for our next interview. Earlier, we spoke with Erica Meyer from Compassion Over Killing regarding the investigation into Cal Cruz hatcheries, and we mentioned that the Santa Cruz Animal Services Authority actually went and seized 88 animals from the facility. Farm Sanctuary was the organization that took custody of all the seized birds, and Farm Sanctuary operates two shelters, a 175-acre farm in upstate New York and a 300-acre farm in North California. Farm Sanctuary rescues, rehabilitates, and provides lifelong care for hundreds of animals who have been rescued from stockyards, factory farms, and slaughterhouses. Joining us on the line is Farm Sanctuary's California Shelter Director, Leanne Cronquist. She has been diligently attending to the physical and medical needs of the Cal Cruz birds from the day they were seized. Welcome to Animal Voices, Leanne.
Hi,
Leanne. Welcome.
How many animals did you take in from Cal Cruz, and what kind of birds were they?
We took in 38 animals, and they were all Peking ducks, the white ducks that you may see, you know, when you're at a pond or something.
After seeing the undercover video footage, it's clear that many of those animals were handled very roughly at the Cal Cruz hatcheries. Can you tell us what conditions the birds were in when they first arrived at the Farm Sanctuary shelter?
When they first came here, they were actually in better condition than they were when they were first seized, because for several weeks they were held in a foster home where they were, you know, getting medication and treatments, because they were still, you know, with the investigation, with the animal control services being involved. I believe there was some, you know, paperwork and legality issue of it in order for us to bring them here. But I do know that, you know, they rescued the 88. We brought 38 of them here. I believe like another foster home took several, but there were many that had to be euthanized because they were just too far gone, and they just couldn't be helped with medical care and stuff.
Wow. Now, what are some of the mutilations or injuries that you saw that were sustained by the animals?
We had neurological kind of mobility issues, particularly in one when he first arrived, and we brought him to the vet, and they couldn't exactly figure out what was going on, but he did eventually recover, so we're not sure if maybe it was like a virus or something that he just caught. But overall, they were, you know, pretty healthy, good feathering, not that many joint problems, just because they were in that foster care. They had the opportunity to get out of that hatchery sooner rather than later and get some of that individualized care that they needed.
I guess the undercover footage just came out to light now, but the investigation was done last year.
Yes, correct.
So how many of the animals are still at the sanctuary now?
We still have 8 of the ducklings, they're not ducklings anymore, 8 of the ducks here, and then 30 of them we were able to adopt out to homes through our farm and an animal adoption network, and we actually brought them up to Oregon. We did some in California, and we went all the way down to Arizona, and some of them were brought to other sanctuaries that rescue ducks, and then others were brought to individual homes.
How have the animals, the 8 that you have at the sanctuary, adapted to sanctuary life since then?
They're doing very, very well. We have the 8, and they're kind of split up into 3 groups, not physically split up, but that's how kind of they've bonded with each other. And so they have their best friends in their groups that they kind of hang out with. What was that? Yeah. And so, you know, within their groups, you know, they eat in the morning and then they go down to the pond and they swim and they hang out in the grass and stuff and then eat a little bit more in the afternoon. So they're doing really, really
well.
They're
living the good life now.
Exactly, yeah.
So, okay, so you allow these animals at the sanctuary to just kind of figure out who they want to hang out with and figure out their own little cliques. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, the, you know, the animals are all their individual personalities, and they choose for themselves who they're going to be best friends with, who they're going to be paired with, because, of, you know, all of these guys, you know, they came together, but they just formed stronger bonds with certain animals and stuff, and it's the same way with our pigs and our turkeys and all the animals here. Even if, you know, if it's a large group that's rescued together, they usually do stay, you know, tightly within their group, but even within that group, there may be, you know, best friends who always sleep next to each other and stuff. So,
Oh, that's so sweet.
It's very interesting to see how they interact with each other and who they become friends with.
I was volunteering at Farm Sanctuary as an intern about 5 years ago, and I noticed the strong bond that they formed with one another, and I remember there were a couple ducks that didn't want to live with ducks, so they went and lived with the bunnies.
Yep, that was Stella and, or actually Bella and Della originally, probably when you were here, and they're a Muscovy breed, so they're not as, they like the water, but they're not as in tune with it as much as like the mallards or the Pekings. So, yep, they were tried out at the duck and goose hutches, and they didn't like it, and they chose for themselves to go to the rabbit barn, and they're perfectly happy up there. Yep, yep. So sometimes we have that happen, too.
That's so cute. Now, during your 6 years working at Farm Sanctuary, I'm sure you've taken in and cared for hundreds of animals that came from food production. Do you think, you know, the injuries and neglect suffered by the cow-cruise birds were unique and particularly shocking, or is this just a reflection of the standard treatment of animals in the food industry?
I think it's a reflection of what happens in the food animal industry, not to say that all, you know, farms, factory farms are exactly alike, but there are thousands out there, and, you know, it's far-fetched to think that this is the only time where this happens, because at the factory farms, they have to process so many animals. It's just like if you're building a car or a computer or anything else, you know, time is money, and you want to push them through, and you need to produce as much product in order to make the most profit. But unfortunately, you know, these are living beings that feel pain and need proper, you know, veterinary care and food and water, and you just can't treat them the same way.
As people become more aware of factory farming and the toll it takes on the animals, some have chosen to boycott factory farm products in favor of organic or free-range meat, milk, and eggs. Do you think choosing these products can make much of a difference for the animals?
Definitely the free range is not well defined, and ultimately, you know, the animals are still slaughtered. They're still transported to a slaughterhouse. So really what we advocate is compassionate choices and, you know, no meat, no milk, no eggs, because ultimately if there's no demand for it, then the animals aren't used for that purpose. We just feel like that's the best.
And we just learned as well from Erica Meyer, in this case, these birds from the Cal-Cruz hatchery, birds like that can go also to the free-range industry. So they start off the same and they end the same as birds in the factory farming industry.
Exactly. Yep, and it's the same thing, you know, if you have an organic dairy, you're still taking those babies away from their mothers because that milk is still going to human consumption. So on the outside, it may look a little bit better, but if you dig deeper, it's still really ingrained in the factory farming practices.
Have you taken in animals from organic or quote-unquote humane farms?
Let's see here. Actually, I don't think we have yet. Yeah, most of our chickens have come from actually, you know, layer facilities, and none of our cattle and none of our sheep and goats, none of the most recent animals, no, we haven't.
Well, when you do, we'd like to have you back on the show and talk about it.
We can talk about, yeah, exactly. So, unfortunately, you would see the same problems. You know, they'd still be debeaked and detoed, and you would see the same problems that you see with the other animals.
And what are some of the problems, like the health issues, that are commonly seen in animals raised for food?
It varies from species to species. You know, like the pigs and the turkeys, they get really bad arthritis because they're bred to be so big, so fast, and, you know, their little legs just can't support them. Mm. The layer hens, for the egg production, they have lots of reproductive issues. It's really sad because, you know, if we rescue a layer hen and they live here at the sanctuary for a year, you know, that's a success. If we have some that live 3 or 4 years, you know, they're really, really old. So there's a lot of consistent problems that you see every time with the species that you run into.
You know, egg producers always say our chickens lay eggs because they're happy, and that's why they're laying eggs. Can you tell us a little bit of the reproductive issues and how they're laying eggs and why they're laying all these eggs?
You know, first, that's a total lie, in the sense that they're, no matter what, they're going to be laying eggs because that's what their body does. You know, they lay eggs, and they've bred it into them to lay so many eggs and so fast. And the problem is it just overtaxes their body. It depletes them of their nutrients. And we have a lot of problems with, like, cancers or egg masses that build up in their reproductive system.
Oh, my gosh.
And if you have a little 3-pound chicken, it's really hard to do a full abdominal surgery and take out these masses because they're already so small and they're already just, you know, trying to keep their weight on and trying to be healthy. To put that much stress on them, it's just really, really hard.
So their body can't even handle the number of eggs they're laying. They just can't help it.
Yeah, it's kind of like sometimes they just, you know, there's some chemical reaction and they just kind of start getting blocked up a little bit.
Gosh.
And but they're, you know, continuously laying the eggs, but they can't pass them. And so, you know, we've had a lot of problems with that. And we do our best to, of course, you know, keep them comfortable and let them live out their natural lives. And we've had some who have been able to adapt to it for years to, you know, months to years, which is phenomenal. They're just really amazing. After you know, spend time with them, like, you know, just like you have, Joanne, you know, you spend time with them and you get to see what they overcome. It's just amazing.
And before they come to the sanctuary, they're nothing more than just production units. However, once they come to the sanctuary, even though their bodies are just trapped in these warped bodies, each of them have such unique personalities. Can you share a story of some of the unique characters that live at the sanctuary?
Oh, gosh. Well, I guess we can, you know, talk about the ducks a little bit. Like I said, they've kind of broken up into three groups, and one of the pairs is Gordy and Otis. And Gordy is just, like, she's always very talkative, and she always has feathers really fluffed up, and she's always very, you know, you put down the food, and she comes right over, and she's quacking really loudly, and she just always seems she's just very outgoing, and it's so funny to see. We have a new piglet, Blossom, who is still down here in our hospital kind of treatment area because she's still fairly new and fairly small, so it hasn't been time to introduce her to our resident pigs. And she has learned that, you know, what the fridge sounds like when people walk by, and she expects a treat. And we have just really strong bonds between the animals, you know, animals that always sleep with each other, that are always together, and it's just amazing to see kind of their quirky personalities. The goats are really funny. I think they like to play and, you know, headbutt, and we have like a goat jungle gym that they run up and run down and chase each other and stuff. So, yeah, they're just, you know, they're just so comfortable, and they get just to do and be whatever they, you know, whatever they need, they have here.
And they're nothing like machines.
Exactly. No, definitely not. All of them are very unique. You know, you get to know each one and how you interact with them and how you feed them and how you do healthcare treatments. It's all different.
Oh. Farm Sanctuary is certainly a really amazing organization, and there are programs and events at Farm Sanctuary which allow people to come and visit these wonderful animals we just spoke about. Can you tell us about these opportunities?
Well, we always have our annual hoedown at both shelters. We actually just had ours here about the beginning of May, the California one, but I know the New York one is coming up at the end of the summer. We have a 4th of July picnic, which is like an open house. So you get self-guided tours, but we're open all day, and there's, like, you know, veggie dogs and kind of some fun games for kids down at the Ed Centers. We have our annual Thanksgiving event before Thanksgiving, just so that we can celebrate the turkeys and celebrate their personalities in the process of what actually most people are going to be doing at their, you know, Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we actually give them a feast and we feed them treats instead of having them be the main course. And
yep.
Then both of the shelters are open for our summer tours. So people can come and take a self-guided tour and meet all the animals themselves. Yeah.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for joining us today, Leanne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for having
me. Thank you. It's been great.
Take care. Leanne Kronkis is the shelter director at Farm Sanctuary in California. To find out more about the organization or follow up on the stories of the rescue ducklings, go to www.farmsanctuary.org.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Remember to sign up for on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR, all one word. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And we've got our new website too, animalvoices.org. Next week on the show, please join us again as we'll be interviewing local Vancouver activist Glenn Gates of Liberation BC, who will be speaking at a number of workshops at the Let Live conference this month and will be talking to us about creative activism. And for our feature interview next week, we will be speaking with Kitty Block, Vice President of the Humane Society International. She will be speaking with us on location from Morocco, where she will be set to meet with the International Whaling Commission, who will be deciding on June 21st whether or not to lift the ban of international commercial whaling. Please tune in again next week, and thanks for listening.
Have a good weekend.